Today on the Inland Journal podcast, bringing opioid treatment to rural communities. Many small towns in the U.S. have been devastated by opioid addictions. One of the contributing factors is that rural providers are often not equipped to help their patients overcome their addictions. They have to direct their clients to clinics and treatment centers in urban areas, and for many, that's not a good answer. A team of WSU health sciences researchers has developed a plan to train small teams of health providers and students to go to rural towns and teach doctors, nurses, and pharmacists how to provide basic treatment to people with addictions. The team has landed a $1.9 million five-year federal grant that will allow them to develop a program and then export it to the people who can most use it. In this program, we talk with Dr. Don DeWitt, a professor in the WSU College of Medicine and Associate Dean for Clinical Education. She's the lead scientist for this grant project.
So this grant is a really fantastic opportunity for us to combine innovation in medical education, a critical community need, and an interprofessional model that is really new and exciting. And I should say that I can't take responsibility for this. This is really a team effort, and I am a latecomer to the team. As national and international grants go, one of the key aspects of obtaining a good grant is to have a breadth and depth of personnel on the grant who are able to deliver. And in my case, they needed a primary care, internal medicine, or similar physician to be the principal investigator. And because of some of the things I'd done in the past, I was the lucky person.
So it's $1.9 million. Who's the granting agency, and how will that money be spent?
Right, so the granting agency is HRSA, which is Health Resources Services Administration. It's a federal agency that does all sorts of things, everything from loan repayment in rural settings, but in this case it's a $1.9 million grant for opioid education. And the genius of this really comes from other people on the grant, including Dr. Barb Richardson, who's a PhD doctor of nursing, and Marion Wilson, also in the School of Nursing, and Dr. Matt Layton, who's been around forever. He's a psychiatrist working in the field of opiate substance use disorder. And so between all of us, it's an opportunity to develop and distribute interprofessional authentic education. What I mean by authentic is that when we talk about interprofessional education, it's been an aspirational goal, but a thorn in everyone's side in health professions education for the last 20 to 30 years. And a lot of schools do it by sticking the medical students and the nursing students in the same auditorium, or teaching the physical therapy and the medical students anatomy together of the lower leg, for example. But that's not really authentic interprofessional education. What the students and health professions teams in the field need is a way to understand each other's roles in this critical bit of helping to address the opioid crisis. And so that means that if I'm a physician and a nurse is providing motivational counseling for a patient to quit, and I'm providing the medication-assisted therapy, buprenorphine, etc., then I need to understand exactly what that nurse is saying in the room and respect, I'll use her because I'm a woman, her skills. The same thing with the pharmacist. I need to respect whatever that pharmacist is contributing, and I need to understand it. I also need to understand the big change in the model of substance abuse. It used to be that we would say, oh, you know, this person, they don't have their life together, you know, they're an addict, blah, 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 they're a horrible person, you know, dregs of society, all of those horrible, demeaning terms. And what we now understand is that opioid addiction can happen to anyone. And if I am a person who goes in with a broken leg and I get more than 5 days of opiate medication, my risk of becoming addicted goes up astronomically. It doesn't matter what my background is, it may matter what my genes are, but it doesn't matter what my socioeconomic status is, etc. And so we're all at risk. And the example that I give to my students and medical residents is when you're in second grade or fourth grade and you're standing up in front of the teacher saying what you want to be when you grow up, nobody stands up and raises their hands and said, I'm sorry, I'd like to be a drug addict or I'd like to be an alcoholic. Nobody says those things. So it's always something that happens, whether it's overprescribing, which doctors fell into the trap of when the, pain is the fifth vital sign came out and doctors were actually told you will lose your job or you will lose your rating or you will lose, your pay will be decreased if you don't meet the requirements of this prescribing. So the doctors are all smart. They want to do the right thing. They're like, okay, we'll work to the regulations. And so now we need to reverse that education amongst the public and physicians that people who are addicted are lowlifes or have something fundamentally wrong with them. They don't. They have a normal human response to, a long-term drug that alters their brain. And we need to change the way we address this because we need all hands on deck. And in rural areas where we don't have as many healthcare providers, and in big cities, team care is critical. Provider substitution with the right skills, everybody working to the top of their license and understanding each other. So very quickly, what the students do is they have participated in a pilot done by Barb Richardson and Marion Wilson and others that took 1,700 students through a simulation where the students would work together in teams. One's a pharmacy student, one's a medical student, one's a nursing student, etc., to provide authentic care in real time to a standardized patient. So essentially a person who's been trained as an actor to be a patient with addiction. The next step in this and what this grant is for is to standardize that education and that simulation experience, which isn't just sitting around a table saying, well, what do you do and what do I do and what do they do? But actually acting it out and seeing it in real time. And so now our students who go out to rural areas for their own education can take this learning with them and have a trained standardized patient, and they can go lead this and facilitate this learning with healthcare providers in the state of Washington writ large. And we know it's a huge state with lots of little pockets of people doing their day-to-day thing, but who don't have access to the kinds of education that those of us in academic medicine have. The last thing I'll say about that is that we also know that going to a lecture for 2 days somewhere, which you can't do if you're a rural provider, to learn these things isn't very effective. So this grant provides authenticity, engages students, engages rural, makes use of WSU's broad network.
So the students then become the trainers, or are there also professional teams such as you and Matt Layton and the others that you mentioned?
That's a great question. So there are faculty on the grant team who are pinpointed to be the experts and go out to help start this train the trainer model. And I think the answer to your question is it depends, but we want to make our reach as far as possible. So that means that five of us can't be everywhere. So we're giving everybody, their superhero clothing and we're saying, go out there and help us address this crisis.
We're talking with Dr. Don DeWitt from the WSU College of Medicine.
So do you pretty much know how these teams work? In other words, are you having to invent how the interpersonal or the interprofessional teams will work, or is it just a matter of pulling together all you know about the models and making it something that's easy to use?
That's a really interesting question. So we know that there's a huge variety of functional roles that people take on. So as a general internist, I've done tons of counseling in my career, including motivational interviewing and behavioral counseling. But in a resource-short environment, whether that's the best use of my time or whether I have a pharmacist or a psychologist or a nurse practitioner who is skilled enough to do that, depends on the local circumstances and who's out there. So this training has to be flexible enough to help people understand the whole package of what the patient needs. And then who delivers it is somewhat secondary, but has to be within that person's scope of practice.
So what about the importance of team care in treating opioid epidemics? Why is it important that you have a team?
Well, partly because of our health system structure. So as a physician, I may be able to deliver all the skills, but in our current system, that would be very expensive. I might not particularly relate well to that patient. So if there is someone else on the team, that's great. We also know that more frequent little bits of follow-up, even by phone, are very helpful for these things. So there was a study done with text messages and people who were trying to quit smoking. And they compared that with people who just got a text message saying, have a great day or whatever. But even those little reminders, like, how's it going? Do you need us? Great, one more day that you've quit. Even those little reminders. And so having more people in the pot who can touch people from different corners of their environment is better.
It seems to me old-time medicine was the whole community would get involved. Somebody would touch, you'd go to the doctor, you'd go to the nurse, your pharmacist. Why is this different? How is this different?
So part of how this is different is because a lot of medical schools don't have the kind of reach and infrastructure that WSU has. We have, just in my area, the Spokane, kind of northeast, eastern part of the state, I have 14 students going out in 2 weeks who are second year students from the medical school. This is our second year of having them go out to these sites. And they go out to these sites for a week in the fall, a week in the winter, and a week in the spring. That means that by the time they go back in the spring, those communities know them. And in the next class up, the first class that did this, I'm just actually downloading a survey on my computer, and about half of the students want to go back to the same site that they were at during their first and second years. Also, because we have campuses all over the state, our campus in Vancouver also has nursing students, and now it has medical students. I don't know about pharmacy students, but you get the point, that we can really take this to a new distributed level than most universities are able to do.
So what's new for this is that medical students are getting involved in this, or at least one aspect of it is that medical students are getting involved. Are there medical schools that you know of doing this too?
Well, so everybody's interested in the opioid crisis. And there are a lot of people who have done medical, I'm assuming that if we can do it, other bright minds have thought of it too. It's really the whole package of having a piloted, validated simulation that's been done before with positive feedback, that's been tweaked to be a really good package. And having a team that has all the right networking to get this out into the community. And so I'll give you an example. In Othello, they have a new federally qualified healthcare clinic, and they have in the last year hired a nursing practitioner whose specialty is opiate addiction. But she's all out there by herself. Now, she's got family docs and so on, but having us be able to bring this kind of a team development exercise to them means that they have a structured way to go forward with their plan rather than a haphazard opportunistic approach, which is what teams often do.
And they can do it themselves. They don't have to bring somebody in from the outside to be a consultant or something like that.
Right. So we can provide the standardized patient, which again makes the experience much richer, much deeper, and much more authentic. And we've had students who've been going out there for 2 years, the same students who at least one of them has expressed a desire to go back to that same place. And that student could take the whole package with, I'll use her again, because and help them do it. Not that the student would be teaching them per se, but the student's been through the simulation and can help reflect and work with the framework.
So Are you already talking with some of those clinics around the state to say, we're developing this, are you interested in us coming out there?
Yeah, it's more like we've developed it and now we've got the funding to partner with you. So hands up, who wants to play?
And lots of hands are going up these days.
I surely hope so.
So you talked about opioid. It seems to be one of the hot issues in terms of this is the one we need to solve here. Are there a lot of people spending time thinking about opioids at the medical education level?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's really become a key part of our medical education stream, number one. Number two, every conference I go to as a physician, this gets brought up. Everywhere from the National American College of Physicians to the local Spokane County Medical Society. Everybody is talking about this. And physicians are so concerned because nobody wants to be part of the problem, right? We all want to be part of the solution, but healthcare has sort of been forced into this by a mistake in regulatory bureaucracy that has got us in this situation. And when you look at the number of deaths related to this, you just go, eek. And there's now much more solid evidence, thanks to Dr. Layton and others, that opioids really aren't the best treatment for a lot of this pain, and that there are other alternatives that are just as good or better. So we want to get in there as soon as we can and operationalize this best practice, because it's hard work for a patient who is addicted to get off this stuff. And what we hope they will get from this at the end of the day is healthcare providers who are comfortable with this difficult process and who can have the skills to know how to take them through it.
Dawn DeWitt is an Associate Dean for Clinical Education and professor in the WSU College of Medicine. She's the lead scientist of a team of WSU Health Sciences faculty members who will develop an opioid education treatment program to take to rural communities. Inland journalist Spokane Public Affairs and Radio Program and Inland Journalist, Spokane Public Radio's Public Affairs Radio Program and Podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast at Apple Podcasts, NPR One, or Google Play. Send your comments and story ideas to inlandjournal@kpbx.org. I'm Doug Nadvornik. Thank you for joining us.